why, how. Those two were his favorites, as they generally got people thinking about what they knew of a problem and ways to expand that knowledge. Most people, though, just seemed to default to looking something up if they didn't know enough about it. Odysseus could do that himself. So he asked more questions. He thought that was what he was supposed to do, but it soon became clear that approach was having a detrimental effect on how crew members were viewing his presence. He had gone from a curiosity to some to an annoyance in surprisingly little time. Those who were afraid of him, he generally avoided. The onboard Marines, surprisingly, had the least issues with him despite the fact that he knew he had terrified many of them. For some reason, they seemed to consider that a good thing. Odysseus was in their heads, and even he couldn't figure out what the hell the Marines were thinking. Unfortunately, while the Marines didn't mind him in their areas, and often tried to answer his questions with patience beyond that of almost any other group on the ship, they simply didn't have the information he needed or the tools to acquire it. The men and women who did, at least potentially, were the least patient with him. The ship had labs, of course. Too many unknowns existed in the galaxy to fly around blindly without field experts to consult when you encountered new phenomena. But those experts, while infinitely patient with their own work, would almost instantly lose their tempers when he distracted them to the lines of thoughts that interested him. Odysseus was growing frustrated. There were too many questions he wanted answers to, and not even hints of those answers to be seen. Steph lounged on the couch in the officer's ready room, eyes vaguely focused on a movie playing on the screen across from him. If someone had asked him, he couldn't have told them what the movie's title was or who was in it or what it was about. His mind was in a near-fugue state, not blank, but not thinking either. A glimmer of motion in the corner of his eye snapped him out of the zone, and he turned his head just enough to recognize the source. He shifted his legs without speaking, and Mila dropped casually into the place beside him as he rocked upright. "Tough day?" he asked, noting that she looked tired. The Primine officer spread her fingers casually, playing off the question.
"We went over all the ship's hardware locks and installed a few new ones as per the Capitan's orders. There was no need for the first part, and the second part was difficult."
"Ah," Steph said, understanding. He'd had to supervise a similar process in his department, securing the ship's helm and navigation from being overridden by the computer without the explicit permission of the crew. Not exactly something that had been a high priority before, though they did have hardware kill switches, of course. Concerns over just what the Odysseus could do had caused some serious rethinks concerning how the systems were designed. Certainly, it would have been nice to figure out how to intercept the commands that the young intelligence had issued without their knowledge in their last fight. Afterward, of course, it would have been suicide to hit the kill switches, as they'd have been left drifting at high speed right into an enemy formation. His main problem with the hardware lock solution was that he didn't think it would work. In a fight, seconds mattered, and there was no possible way they'd be able to second-guess the computers in those moments. So, for the moment at least, Steph was more interested in making sure that Dis knew better than to mess with his board. "Get everything done?" he asked, leaning back as he glanced at the small, slim woman sitting beside him.
"All new systems were installed and tested, Stefan," Mila said, her accent coming out more than usual from the fatigue he assumed. She yawned. "But it took all night."
Steph winced. Mila was in charge of the Odysseus's weapons, which were literally everywhere on the ship. He imagined that she must have been running all over the vessel to get hardware circuits installed and tested in every single weapon system. The primaries were all run through the bridge, of course, and had been installed from the start. But it seemed paranoia was the name of the day. "Okay, come on, time to get you some sleep," he said, noticing that she was almost, though not quite, nodding off right there in the ready room. He got up, gesturing to her with one hand. "When are you on duty next?" Mila looked around blearily, noting the time on the closest monitor.
"Next shift, 2 hours.
"Oh, hell no! You've been running ragged since we started the repairs. I'll let your department know you're out for a full shift."
"What? No, I have things left." Mila protested as Steph reached down and pulled her up to her feet. Mila, we've done the refit, he said seriously. We've just been marking time until the skipper can figure out what to do about this. Mila sighed.
I know, but there's always so much to do.
Welcome to a warship, Steph said. There's nothing here that isn't in constant need of babying to keep it running properly, the crew included. We're the toughest, baddest babies in the galaxy. It's a paradox of combat, Mila, but if you let it, a ship like this will eat you alive. And I'm talking about the ones that aren't apparently sentient. He guided her out of the ready room, waving to the few others who had been watching with some amusement, and headed toward the habitat section.
I need to go change the roster,
Mila protested, moving toward the command deck. Steph rolled his eyes. Hey, Dis! Mila jumped slightly as a small figure in bronze armor appeared, marching alongside them.
Yes, Steph?
The boy asked, a hand casually on the sword he wore.
Do me a favor, will you? You can access the computer records, right? Mark Mila here as off-duty until the next cycle.
Mila looked between Steph and the boy, known as Odysseus, with wide eyes, blinking rapidly. Odysseus nodded firmly.
I will see to it.
Thanks,
Steph said as the boy vanished, maintaining lockstep with them even as he faded out.
See? No problem.
You ask him to do minor tasks?
Mila asked, somewhat incredulous.
Stefan, he is an amazing example of the universe.
He is a preteen on a warship, Steph said dryly. That means he gets to play gopher until he learns the ropes, and probably even after.
But
I was a kid in a military unit once, Steph said as they walked into the habitat section. I learned more just running errands for people like Ray's than I ever did in school. Whatever else he is, Dis is thinking and expressing himself as a child right now, so I'm going to treat him as one. He's curious and he's bored, and that's not a good combination in any normal child.
Odysseus is not some child running around the ship with nothing to do, Stefan,
Mila blurted, eyes wide.
He is a luminous example of what the universe can produce. He is incredible. A ship made sentient. You cannot treat him like some errand boy.
Oh, yeah? Watch me, Steph said, pointing ahead of them. Your quarters.
Mila ignored his gesture, not looking remotely as tired as she had been.
Do not change the subject, Stefan. This cannot be how you interact with someone so special as Odysseus.
How do you interact with him? Steph asked.
Mila reddened slightly.
I have not.
Why not?
It would not be so polite to...
Mila stammered slightly.
He should not be bothered by such trivialities.
Why not? He's not doing anything right now, and it's our home as much as his, Steph said. If he was busy with important work like you've been, I'd agree. He isn't, however. He's a child, looking to find his way, and he doesn't have all that many options right now. He's as close to warrior born as anyone I've ever seen, and that's where his future lies, whether he likes it or not. The Odysseus is going back into battle, Mila. This delay is just the Admiral and the Commodore refusing to see the obvious, and that means Dis is going to be with us in the next fight. Don't you think you should get to know him before that happens?
Mila stared at him for a moment, her jaw open, but no sound coming out. Steph gave her time. Then, when no retort was forthcoming, he guided her hand to the door release to her quarters and let the portal pivot open. Think about it, he suggested, gesturing to the room. But try to get some sleep. She slowly stepped into her room, letting the door close behind her, and he turned and walked away down the corridor. He was almost out of the habitat section when he felt a presence at his side.
Hey, Dis, he said without glancing to the side. You get the roster changed?
Of course, Odysseus answered. I did it before I left you.
Steph chuckled. Should realize that.
She doesn't think of me the same way you do, Odysseus said, not surprising Steph with the segue in the slightest. Not many of them do.
They don't have to, Steph told him. You're not a kid, Dis. You just choose to act like one right now. But a kid can't be in 100 places at once. Can't change the roster before I finish asking for the favor. A kid doesn't know everything you know, can't do a tenth of what you can. You can find a different balance with every single person here, and you probably should.
Why?
Steph chuckled again, amused by the almost childish tone in the very childlike question the entity asked him.
"Because you can," Steph answered simply.
He could see the boy getting ready to ask why again, but pause, as he realized that Steph had maneuvered the answer such that he had worked out the answer himself, which caused the entity disguised as a boy to scowl at the fighter pilot from under the ancient Greek helmet.
"You do that on purpose," Odysseus practically pouted.
"Yes, I do," Steph said. "You can enjoy driving the geeks as crazy as you like, but don't play those games with me. I will figure out ways to make you regret it."
"We'll try,"
Steph grinned, slapping the boy on his armored shoulder.
"Now you're thinking like a combat-ready badass, Dis."
Mila lay down in the bed that took up the center of her quarters, staring at the ceiling. She'd been so damn tired only a few minutes ago, and now all she could feel was a growing ire at Steph for treating this opportunity as cavalierly as he was. How that infuriating man could look upon something as incredible as the Odysseus entity as a mere child, and then proceed to treat it like some errand boy. The reasoning escaped her. The idea of such a vastly different intellect was one of the earliest dreams she could remember, that somewhere in the depths of the universe there could be other intelligent beings, different life. Her people had never discovered any, not as far back as their records went. Now, right here, there was such a being, and that insufferable man, Stefan, insisted on treating it like a child. How horribly frustrating. She twisted in the bed, her mind unwilling to give up the train of thought it was pursuing, made all the more frustrating by the fact that she knew Odysseus was following her every thought. She tried to force her mind to think about anything else, closing her eyes, finally managing to relax enough so that her fatigue took over, and she drifted off. Miriam Heath raised her eyebrows as she read the brief she just received from the Commodore, then looked up at him.
"Are you certain about this, sir?"
"Hanging around here is just letting people stew and dig themselves in deeper," Eric said. "The longer we let that happen, the more people will let negative thoughts take over. I want everyone working, thinking about working, or sleeping. No more of this sitting around dwelling on ghosts or whatever else they've been doing."
Commander Heath nodded.
"Understood, sir. I'll issue the orders. We'll be underway as soon as the Forge authorizes out transit through the Corona."
"Good. See to it."
Miriam saluted quickly and departed, leaving Eric standing in what was normally the squadron command station. He supposed he should shift to the ship's command deck shortly, but he was too used to issuing orders from where he was.
"The Enterprise will be here soon enough anyway, I suppose." Damned if he wasn't getting used to the whole squadron command thing again, though it wasn't quite the same as the Archangels.
Eric turned his attention back to the computer, opening up all the files they had on the Imperials, their ships, and their tactics. The files were far from complete, and in fact were far from adequate in his opinion. So far, they'd faced what he believed were a couple of Imperial probes in force. That was, they'd deployed enough force to be taken seriously, but hadn't really tried to take any ground. They were fishing for information, and he had to assume that they'd acquired it. They could possibly deploy a third probe in force, but Eric knew that sooner or later the Empire was going to make its real play, and he was almost certain that the enemy had better intel than he had. That made any plans he might make rather open to frequent and abusive visits from Mr. Murphy. Hell, he might as well invite the old bastard onto the bridge and roll out the red carpet for him in the process.
"The Admiral will have redeployed the Prometheus rogues by now, but I can't count on them. They have their own mission to fulfill," Eric thought grimly. "Roberts will follow his orders to the letter, and I know we can count on the Primae, but our order of battle is barely able to deal with a couple of their probes."
That was the crux of the situation. Ships. Eric had men to call on, the finest he'd known and more than capable of overcoming anything thrown at them. He had plenty of territory to give up if he needed to. He could fall back for light years, sacrificing space to draw the enemy into an extended logistical chain. What he didn't have was ships. Earth had 5 heroics. He was aware that the Solar Forge wasn't ready to build more anytime soon, so the Terran order of battle was 5 heroics, Not a single one more. The Primine order of battle had grown significantly, and from what he'd been informed, they now had 15, with 3 more in various construction phases. Still, that left him with no more than 20 heroics to cover the Primine core worlds and Earth. He wasn't sure what the current count of rogues was, but the last number he had indicated that they had at least 30 of the smaller ships. Unfortunately, 10 were assigned to Prometheus, and those ships would be doing a new job that wouldn't leave them at his disposal. Since another 10 were assigned permanently to Solar Defense, along with 2 heroics, he couldn't count those either, unless things went horribly wrong, which honestly meant that he was likely to be deploying those ships in combat before this was all over, assuming we make it that far. He knew they didn't have enough ships to defend against what the Empire was likely to send after them, what they would certainly send, sooner or later. Eric had been on the wrong side of bad odds more than once in his career. The place was starting to feel like home. And to think I wanted to retire after the war. What the hell would I have done as a retiree?
Chapter 8 A.E.V. Autolycus, Deep Black. Morgan stood the watch, looking out at the expanse beyond the observation screens. They were in deep space, no star around them for light years. It wasn't a comfortable place to be, he had found since taking command of his lovely King of Thieves. Normally the view was distorted by the warp fields, and was beautiful in its own way, but unnatural enough to be little more than a fancy screensaver. With warp drives active, the color shift from the Doppler effect, combined with the high-energy particles trapped in their fields, actually made it look like the star field was streaking around them. The scene was almost like old science fiction films, entirely illusory in nature. The Prometheus rogues were not warping at the moment, however, and despite the fact that they were bombing through interstellar space at almost 80% the speed of light, nothing out there was moving. The stars weren't even flickering. Somehow, that felt far less real than the illusion of motion created by the warp fields.
Sir?
Morgan didn't turn around. He just continued to drift and stare out at the depths beyond the ship. What is it, Dayu? Commander Lee drifted up beside him.
No contacts as of yet, sir.
Well, that's not surprising. We're casting a wide net, but no one has any idea when our targets will show up.
Yes, sir.
Worried, Commander? Morgan asked, hearing something in her voice.
Concerned. We could be reinforcing the others. It doesn't take this many ships to stand a sentry watch.
We could. However, if another 10 rogues would make that much difference, then we've vastly misinterpreted the intelligence we've been gathering. Our mission may be critical, however, both in warning the others of what's coming and other things.
Dayu looked at him sharply.
Other things?
Classified, Commander. Admiral Grayson has a plan for us. Leave it at that. She nodded slowly.
Yes, Captain.
AEV Derricor, Deep Black. Captain Jackson of the Henri Derricor was casually sucking his coffee from a military-issue sippy cup, no longer noticing the loss of dignity he had originally felt when first presented with the zero-gravity cup. The coffee still tasted as bad and still got too cold too fast for his taste, but he was always amazed over what he could get used to. He was admiring the static starscape beyond the ship as he relaxed in a casual float, a snack bar drifting by his head as he kept one eye on a projected repeater view of the ship's scanner station off to his left. The Prometheus rogues had been drifting through interstellar space for the past 2 days. Most people would consider traveling at 80% the speed of light to be moving pretty quickly, but for a rogue, it was downright pedestrian. He reached for the snack bar just as the ship's proximity alarm went off. He twisted in space to see what the hell was sending alarms off around him. Grabbing a hand grip, he pulled himself in toward the display repeater, leaning in as close as he could and staring at the screen. What the hell is that? I've never seen a space warp that size. Is that a black hole? Jackson reached up and flipped a few switches. All hands, Jackson. Sounding general quarters. The alarm shifted from generic mode to general quarters, calling the crew to duty as he pushed off the wall and flew toward the hatch that would take him down to the bridge. His first officer, Commander Orson, was waiting for him by the time he slid into command.
"What do we have?" Jackson demanded, noting that the key stations were manned and people were already working furiously.
"Massive space-time warp, sir," Orson said, not looking up.
"What do we have that I couldn't have figured out on my own?" he growled in response.
"Still differentiating targets, sir."
"Targets? It's not a single warp?" he asked.
"Well, there goes the black hole idea."
"That's a big negative," Orson answered, face buried in his station. "We're showing a lot of signals, clustered so tight they look like one big signal. They're moving fast, too, 100 times light, maybe 150. "Give me vectors," Jackson snapped, "and start backtracking them on light-speed imagers. I want to know where they're going and where the hell they came from. Put this over the network right now. Right the hell now. This is what we've been waiting for."
"I wish it was a black hole, damn it."
AEV Autolycus. Morgan swung himself into the command station and pulled the straps over his shoulders, locking himself into place as others poured onto the bridge of the auto and did the same.
"Do we have numbers yet?" he demanded.
"Negative, sir," Dayu Lee responded. "Targets have not entered visual range, and they're flying too close formation for our gravity scanners to pick out individual signals. Estimate? 100 ships, sir."
Morgan paled.
100?
Give or take,
his first officer responded with a gesture of uncertainty.
"It depends wildly on what sort of vessels are in this formation. Our estimate is based on the squadron formation of the last 2 Imperial formations, which leaned heavily to cruisers with some destroyer-level support."
"Log it all," Morgan ordered, "and send to all ships in the net. Run silent. No unnecessary maneuvering. Do we have anybody in their path?"
Lee shook her head.
"Not such that it would be noticed."
"Good," Morgan replied, though he'd have been surprised if they had. Space was a massive, well, space. The odds of their having any ships directly in the path of the Imperial vessels were incredibly long, even considering that they'd arrayed themselves along the likely approach paths based on the earlier probes. "All ships are to maintain passive scans only," he ordered. "I want every detail we can grab as their light reaches us. But in the meantime, keep working on getting actual numbers from the space warp. Every piece of intel is going to mean life or death for some poor bastard in the order of battle when the time comes. Let's get them everything we possibly can."
"Aye, aye, Captain."
Imperial Formation. Lord's Own Dreadnought, Empress Leon.
"My lord, we're approaching the outer limits of Othar-claimed territory."
"Thank you, Captain," Yesan said as he walked around the console and looked at the large display of the projected stars ahead of them. "Any signs of contact yet?"
"No, my lord. No ships have been detected," the captain of the Leon responded. "We've been scanning for any disturbances since shortly after we left Imperial-claimed space."
Yesan frowned. "The anomalous species mask their ships better than that, Captain. Maintain visual scans as well."
The captain nodded.
"We have, my lord. However, nothing has shown there either. If there are any ships out in the abyss, then they are cloaked as well as running without any drives."
Yesan was well aware that was possible as well, but there was little he could do about it, he supposed. With a force the size of the sector fleet, they would be unable to sneak up on any moderately competent enemy.
"Very good, Captain. Continue with the plan," he ordered. "Inform me when we enter Othar territory."
"Yes, my lord."
The captain left him, returning to his duties, while Yesan examined the star charts before him in detail, not even remotely for the first time. The Othars hadn't spread out as much as one might have expected, given the time since they'd broken away from the early Empire. A few dozen star systems were under their control, most of which were now in tatters, thanks to the Drossen. There was good reason for the lack of systems under Othar control. Even the Empire had grown slowly past a certain point. Among other reasons, communications at the distances involved were problematic, even with faster-than-light signaling. The Empire only annexed what territory it was certain could be controlled and integrated into Imperial culture. Expanding beyond the ability to maintain that cultural link would merely encourage splinter groups to form, which would require fleet intervention and generally became a massive hassle. So the Empire only allowed that sort of situation to happen on rare occasion, primarily to maintain training and readiness among the fleet, but also to occasionally expend munitions as a boost to the Imperial Core world's economies.
Building new weapons kept the people busy, and believing that they were earning their keep. So few of them realized that their jobs could have been better completed by automated factories. Another revolt was brewing, this time closer to the core worlds, and with the Empress's permission, that would be allowed to begin shortly after the issue with the Oathers was dealt with. Close enough to remind the fools of the lower classes to wave their flags and stop grumbling about how much money was spent on fleet operations. The revolt would make for good training, assuming this situation with the Oathers was resolved as quickly as he expected. If not, well then, this would be excellent training as well. Navark Misrem looked at the clear scopes being repeated to her command station, a hint of trepidation filling her as they approached the Oather sector. "Are you all right, Navark?" her adjutant asked softly, his voice pitched low enough that only she could hear it.
"I'm fine," Misrem responded calmly. "I'm just wondering where they are."
"They, Navark?"
"The enemy. They're out there. I can feel them."
The adjutant frowned, examining the screens. "Nothing is on the screens, Navark." Misrem smiled thinly.
"I am aware of that, yes. Nonetheless, they're out there. The enemy has the capacity to hide from our scanners, both gravity and visual, and that's inside a star system, when they have a few light hours at most to play in. Out here, they have light years. The pure chance it would require to locate them in deep space isn't worth thinking on. No. Unless they're complete fools, and they are not, then they're observing us even now."
"I see." The adjutant looked concerned. "Should we do something?"
"No. Let them watch," Misrem said grimly.
"If our intelligence is correct, it will do them little good, and likely depress morale, if anything. And if it is not correct..."
"Well, then we're in for a real fight, aren't we?"
Misrem asked, laughing harshly. "Still, if they show significantly more force than we expect, the Fleet Lord can withdraw and call up the Imperial Home Fleet. There is no possible way that our information is so faulty that they have enough forces to survive that much power."
"Ah, I see."
"Do you?" Misrem wondered, glancing at the adjutant. She rather doubted that he did, but... that was another irrelevance. Her adjutant was ostensibly there to assist her, but since he'd been assigned after she had lost her ship in Oather space, she suspected that he was there to keep a close eye on her. That was fine. She'd expected as much to happen. Any competent fleet commander would. As this one seemed competent, which was more than she'd come to expect, she was fine with the assignment. Not that it would matter if she weren't. In either case, the die was cast, and they would all soon see how things turned out. While she was confident that the Fleet Lord had sufficient power assembled to annihilate anything the Oathers and their allies could put before them, Misrem suspected that the fighting would be more intense than the Imperial forces were used to dealing with.
"Whatever else these people are, they are far from Imperial patsies pretending to be revolutionaries."
"Entering the outer limits of Oather-controlled space, Fleet Lord."
"Thank you, Captain."
Yesan didn't look over to where the captain was standing, his eyes focused on the projected display of the stars before them. They had officially crossed over into the section of space that demarked where the Empire would draw the line between unclaimed and claimed territory. That was just a political divide, however, a place to draw lines on projection maps, and was relatively meaningless. So while they were officially within Oather territory, he doubted that they'd seen anything in terms of resistance until they entered one of the star systems, and likely not one of the less populated ones either. Still, they were now officially in enemy territory. "Signal all ships. We are on combat alert until further notice," he ordered.
"Yes, my lord."
A soft alarm sounded in the distance, one that he knew would be repeated on every vessel in his fleet, the sound of the Empire at war. Yesan smiled. It was a sound he loved to hear.
"Whoever you are," he thought, looking at the stars laid out before him, "thank you for this."
AEV Autolycus. "Bold as brass," Morgan said as they watched the formation fly by on visuals. The ships had passed them hours ago, of course, but the light was only then reaching the forces of Operation Prometheus. Where the gravity scanners had been unable to pick out individual signatures, the light-speed scanners had no such problem.
"I would say that they have reason to be," Commander Lee said, sounding a little numb.
"What's the final count?" Morgan asked, blowing out a breath of air.
"Not available yet. At least 423 so far. The computers are having difficulty getting an accurate count on visual alone. Even in clean formation, they're moving enough to throw off the software."
Great. He supposed a fully accurate count didn't matter all that much. 100 ships seemed like overkill compared to the forces Morgan knew Earth and the Primenae could muster. 400 was the end of the war.
"We should get a more precise count once we can run comparison analysis against all the different angles from the Prometheus rogues," Lee said, examining the data. "There are at least 8 ships in that formation larger than anything we've ever seen. They make heroics look very small, Captain."
"I can see that." The mass figures that were showing on Morgan Station were frankly terrifying. "The question is, are they battleships or carriers?" he wondered, examining the profiles.
"Battleships," Lee answered. "There are no significant bays I can see that would allow them to launch fighters, and I notice no signs of their parasite nodules on the larger vessels."
"True. Run hyperspectral analysis on them and make that a priority," he ordered. "We have data and analysis on most of the ship types I'm seeing, but those big bastards are another story. I want something to transmit back to the Admiral."
"Yes, sir."
Morgan didn't know if the transmittal would matter ultimately. The force he was looking at was beyond anything they'd planned for. There was no way the available ships would be enough to hold back the fleet they'd just scanned. The resources needed to build and maintain a force like he was seeing was beyond Earth's current levels entirely, and he wasn't sure if the Primenae could pull off such a feat either, despite their considerably more advanced technology and wider access to resources. After everything he'd seen the Earth accomplish and face with the Drossen, Morgan found this to be a bitter realization. "Make sure they're well past us," he ordered. "Then stand by to warp space."
"Yes, Captain."
"Send the coded signals as soon as we have initial analysis," he stated. "For what it's worth, let the fleet know what's coming their way." Chapter 9. AEV Enterprise, Sol System.
"Black!"
Commander Alexandra Black looked up from where she was working, spotting Chief Corrin as the other woman approached across the deck of the Enterprise's main flight control area. The steady clang of her magnetic boots was heard more sharply as she got closer.
"What is it, Chief?"
Black asked as she straightened up from the fighter's diagnostic access panel, grabbing a rag to wipe her hands clean. Everything was flightworthy, of course. Her deck crew were damned good at their jobs, but Alexandra still preferred to do a final once-over before she strapped the SF-101 Vorpal to her back and trusted her life to the conglomeration of tech.
"Word just filtered down,"
Corrin said, coming to a stop beside the ungainly-looking fighter.
"We're going on alert. Deployment imminent."
Black stiffened, eyes widening. That was news to her, and technically she really should have heard about it before Corrin. But she was well aware that the NCO network had a way of learning things before anyone else possibly could.
"Where the hell are we deploying to?"
she asked, mind racing.
The Empire.
It pretty much had to be the Empire, as best she knew. Unless the Drossen had shown up again. God forbid those things ever see the light of Sol again. The Empire was the only current threat on the board.
"Details are light," Corrin admitted. "But the deployment order is expected to come down the chain within the hour."
Alexandra flipped the access panel shut and twisted the catch over to lock it into place.
"We're ready," she said.
"Good news, bad news on that," Corrin said.
"What's the good news?"
"We're getting another 5 squadrons of Vorpals and pilots to fill out the wing, so we won't be light anymore."
That was good news, Alexandra supposed.
"And the bad?"
"They're all fresh." Alexandra grimaced, almost in pain.
"Right before a deployment?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"I'll speak with the CAG. We'll get them indoctrinated as quickly as we can," Alexandra said, more to herself than to the chief. "If this is a real deployment, the last thing we need is the level of fumbling bullshit that will be caused by new blood in the teams. Why the hell can't they send us people before the galaxy is about to end? That would be too smart, ma'am.
There was some truth in that statement. Victor James was an unassuming man in most environments he might be found in. The sort people tended to overlook in a crowd, with just a few notable exceptions. The most notable of those was the bridge of his command, where he brooked no questioning that he was the center of the universe. The AEV Enterprise was the third and last Odyssey-class ship ever constructed by Earth's infrastructure before it was all but annihilated during the Drossan invasion. Named after the second ship of the class, which had been sacrificed along with her captain and some significant number of her crew, his ship had been obsolete before she was commissioned. With the new Rogue and Heroic-class vessels taking center stage, the Enterprise had been relegated back to Sol System Patrol, a largely useless waste of resources for a ship that had been conceived as a carrier and force projection vessel. But even he had to admit in his darker moments that there was a long way between the capabilities of his baby and the Odysseus. Now, however, he was looking at orders to move his ship to full alert status prior to an expected deployment out of the system. That meant something big and bad was coming down the pipe, he had no doubt. Commander, James walked across the lightly curved deck of the bridge to where Commander Bride was standing watch. Begin issuing orders to have the crew work up to deployment levels. Bride looked over at him quizzically, but nodded curtly.
Yes, sir.
We'll be receiving new squadrons of Vorpals over the next 2 days, James went on. Have the deck crews make space and start an inventory check. Make sure we can handle the repairs and maintenance for an extended deployment. The quizzical look vanished, replaced by one of understanding, concern, and a hint of excitement, as Bride recognized the depth of meaning in those orders. Working the crew up to deployment levels was just training, but resupply, reinforcements, and checking logistics meant a lot more.
The Empire, sir?
Bride asked softly, pitching his voice to keep from being heard. Most likely, James responded in kind. No confirmation yet, but when Grayson takes an emergency trip out on a fast courier and turns around and blasts back less than a week later, and we start getting orders like this, it's a good bet, Commander.
Not to sound like I don't want a deployment, Bride said, but are they insane? There's no way we're going toe-to-toe with one of those monster cruisers we've been briefed on.
James was noncommittal. Well, I think it's a sign that something bad is coming down the pipe, but I'm not sure I agree with you entirely. They're big bruisers, yes, but Weston already proved that you can wreak havoc on the big boys with an Odyssey-class ship.
The Imperials aren't as simple-minded as the Drossan, Bride countered. If they were, we wouldn't be needed in the first place.
James had to unhappily concede that as truth. The current fleet of Heroic and Rogue-class ships could utterly annihilate a massive armada of Drossan-level opponents. Ordering the deployment of the Enterprise, given the current administrative investment in modern doctrine beliefs, was a sign that the Admiral was just short of panicking. He didn't think anything would make Admiral Grayson panic, but she had to be as close as she got at the moment. And the upper brass and politicians had to be worse for them to suddenly shift doctrine and deploy the Big E.
We'll see how bad things are sooner or later, James said. In the meantime, I'm just looking forward to getting the E out into the black again. We've been sunbound too damn long.
Bride nodded. Amen to that. Station Unity 1, Earth Orbit.
This is madness!
Admiral... Amanda Grayson spoke in cool tones, carefully and intentionally not leaning away from the blustering fool in her face.
The universe is mad. Live with it or die. I don't care which. Just stay out of my way.
The red-faced admiral reddened even further, making Grayson wonder idly if he were about to have a stroke.
You cannot be serious! You're deploying part of our home fleet, including the Enterprise? That's sending men off to useless deaths!
What Admiral Harrison is trying to say, Congressman Jeremiah said in a thankfully calmer tone, is that it would seem to make more sense to keep the home fleet intact and focus our strength here at home.
Congressman, Grayson half turned, if I thought I had the political pull, I would strip the cupboards bare here and send everything we had. I would much rather fight critical battles as far away from Earth as humanly possible.
However, you don't even know if there is an Imperial fleet on the way, the congressman said smoothly.
Of course there is, Grayson said with a hint of amused derision. What I don't know is when they'll arrive.
That is pure guesswork,
the admiral roared, frustration palpably oozing off him.
No, it is a well-educated projection.
They're coming, admiral, congressman, she said firmly. If you want to hide in the sand, feel free to do so. I have the authority and political backing to do what I've ordered. If I thought I could convince you, I would have ordered much more, I assure you.
You've burned a lot of your favors on this, admiral, Congressman Jeremiah said. If you're wrong, I'll see you replaced.
If I'm wrong, I'll happily retire, secure in the knowledge that the world didn't end on my watch, Grayson said flatly. In the meantime, you both need to...
Admiral Grayson, ma'am!
She cut off her statement as she turned to the ensign who'd come rushing in. For a young officer to interrupt an admiral in mid-speech, she knew something was wrong.
What is it, ensign?
Transition signal from the Autolycus, ma'am, the young officer said, red in the face as she looked at the obviously angry men and Grayson.
It's not detailed, but you need to see this.
Grayson extended her hand, accepting the display flimsy and looking it over briefly. Well, gentlemen, she said, taking no satisfaction at all in her next words, despite the content, it would seem that I won't be retiring just yet.
What?
Congressman Jeremiah looked confused, while the admiral at his side paled and took a stumbling step back.
What does that mean?
How many?
The admiral asked.
More than we can handle,
Grayson said candidly, her tone stoic.
Many times more than we can handle.
She handed the flimsy to the man without any further words, letting him glance over the report. The FTL transmissions from ships underway were by necessity of extremely limited space, so the words were few, but the meanings were manifold.
My God, the admiral breathed out. This is...
Let's just hope we can keep the fighting a long way from here, Grayson said firmly.
What are you two talking about?
Congressman,
the now very pale admiral took his arm as he handed back the flimsy, then walked the congressman away.
Let's allow Admiral Grayson to do her work. We'll discuss this elsewhere.
Grayson watched them go with a hint of satisfaction that was almost buried by the enormity of what she had just read.
We knew that we were likely outmassed, if not outclassed, but by this much?
She had to keep the fighting as far from Earth as she possibly could. The Kardashev construction was nowhere near ready for use, still being early in the self-replicating phase. If the Empire got to Earth, no matter how many of the home fleet she kept close, they would be overwhelmed. Grayson walked around her desk, taking a seat and opening a file.
Really hoped not to pin everything on Prometheus. It's a long shot,
pun unintended, Grayson thought. Ensign, she called, getting the attention of the young officer who had waited by her door.
Yes, ma'am.
Signal Prometheus, she ordered. I want status updates. We need that system online immediately.
Yes, ma'am.
AEV Enterprise. As often happened, by the time the official orders had been cut, everyone already knew more or less what was happening. You just couldn't move thousands of tons of ship and people without giving them some idea of what was coming. Deciphering the meaning behind orders was a game every serviceman played, and experienced people were often decidedly good at. None of the details had reached the crew of the Big E, certainly. Operational security in the Black Navy wasn't that bad, but everyone had a decent idea of where things were heading. James looked over the brief orders he'd been issued and just managed to suppress a sigh. The Enterprise had been issued orders to place itself under the command of Commodore Weston. Not exactly James's ideal choice for a commanding officer if given his druthers. By all measures, Weston was a capable tactician, that was beyond question. He did tend to be a little bit of a show-off, however, and James had never much liked the man's strategic acumen. None of that mattered. Orders were orders. Commander Bride, he walked over to the commander's station. How are our logistics?
We're ready for an extended deployment, sir, Bride answered.
However, the supply train ships are a bit of a different story. James grimaced. That didn't surprise him as much as it should.
Logistics was a touchy beast at the best of times, and dealing with new fleet ship classes, largely untested crews, and the god-awful problems of resupply en route while in space were making for rather larger-than-normal problems. On the bright side, it looks like the Admiral has been able to shake loose a few more BSV-class ships, Bride said through pursed lips. However, we still don't have nearly enough equipped with transition drives. Most of them are running Alcubierre drives, staffed by block engineers.
We'll make do, James said firmly. It's over our pay grade anyway. When we get to Rankeel, we'll drop that in the Commodore's lap. It's his job to figure out.
Bride laughed dryly. You really don't like the man much, do you?
Wouldn't matter if I did, James replied in kind. But I have no quarrels with him. I just think he's a little too enamored with his high-profile lifestyle.
Bride shrugged. Maybe. At any rate, with those new BSV-class ships, that brings our supply and logistical capability up to almost 50 ships. I have to admit, I didn't even know we had that many ships of any type, let alone these.
They refurbished a lot of the old tankers as they could, and the old slips that had been used to build ships before the heroic class became standard are still capable of military constructions. So between us and the block, we can turn out smaller, obsolete, and less high-profile hulls fairly quickly, James said. He didn't mention that the Enterprise herself had come from one of those slips and was now considered to be one of the smaller, obsolete, and less high-profile hulls herself. He looked away from the commander and over to the crew standing at their stations on the bridge, all of them among the best the Earth and Confederation had to offer.
Obsolete, my ass. Alexandra Black pushed her hair off her sweat-slicked forehead, feeling as filthy as the rest of her under the jumpsuit that clung as she moved. She'd pulled all the pilots in her flight and made sure every one of them had checked out the aviation capabilities of their birds, and when that was done, she dropped every Vorpal in the squad into sim mode and started flight training drills. She would have preferred some more deep space time, but that wasn't going to happen while they were sitting on a deployment order, so sim time would have to do.
Lieutenant Commander!
The CAG, Commander Hawkins, looked up as she stomped up to him in her magnetic boots.
Everything go well?
My squadron is combat ready,
Alexandra confirmed confidently.
Good. I want you to handle Indoc for a couple of the new squadrons we're picking up. We won't have long to get them up to speed, but let's do what we can.
Of course, sir.
Integrating new squadrons into their flight wing was going to be a rough job. Most of the best experienced pilots had moved on to other duties, which meant that the majority of those she was likely to be getting would be low-hour rookies with minimal deep space hours in their jackets.
I know it sucks, Alex, Hawkins told her, but better to iron out what we can now than let attrition do it for us.
I know, Jake. Just can't help but wince at the thought of the work is all.
You and me both, sister, the CAG laughed. Don't sweat it. You've got a handle on this, and I'll be taking what weight I can off those of you I have running in, Doc. But we're all going to be crushed for time, make no mistake.
Roger that, sir.
She knew he wasn't joking by any means. With a deployment order imminent, everyone was about to be hammering their heads against the hull, trying to make time appear from nowhere.
If only there was a way to store the time we waste when we're in stand-down and bring it out at moments like these, she thought.
If anyone could figure out how to make that sort of time bank, Alexandra had no doubt that she or he would be venerated as the patron saint of military personnel for all time left to come.
I'm on it, sir.
Never a doubt, Lieutenant Commander.
Chapter 10 AEV Odysseus, Forge Facility, Rankeel System. Solar plasma clung to the space-time field of the Odysseus as the big ship exploded out of the stellar corona and into open space beyond the Rankeel primary. All systems check, Commodore. Eric expected nothing less. In terms of basic maintenance, the Odysseus was as ready to fight as the day she'd sailed out of the forge for the first time. It was crew readiness he was a little concerned about, but he'd sweat the bullshit out of them if he had to.
Damn few problems can't be cured by exhaustion, sleep, or a judicious ass-kicking.
He hoped he wouldn't have to resort to the third option, though Eric was far from being above such things if that was what it took to get the job done. He'd seen too much over the years,
and if it cost him his career to keep his people living, he was willing to take the chance. The only matter that took higher priority was accomplishing the mission, and even then he'd sometimes sacrifice a mission if it meant saving his people. Such decisions depended very much on the importance of the mission. The current one, well, there was no higher value mission, ever. He just didn't know if the victory conditions would be possible to meet.
"Commodore," Miram said, gesturing him over, "you're going to want to see this."
"What is it, Commander?"
"Rankiel Commission just relayed this from Earthcom. It's a cipher transmit from the auto."
Miram looked evenly at him, shaking her head.
"Not good news, sir."
"Let's see it."
Eric reached out to pull the screen in his direction as he leaned over.
"The enemy fleet."
Miram nearly jumped out of her skin as she and Eric twisted in place to glare at the slight form of the armored boy who had appeared between them like an apparition.
"Don't do that, Odysseus," Miram hissed, clutching at her chest.
"Apologies, I forget."
Eric glowered at the boy, knowing damn well that was bullshit.
"Attention!"
he barked, causing Odysseus to snap straight reflexively. Knowing how the boy's thoughts were partially formed by the crew of the Odysseus made understanding him slightly easier.
"Is that how you approach your CO?"
Eric growled.
"No, sir!"
the boy squeaked out in a voice that was almost, though not quite, cracking like a teenager going through changes.
"Sorry, sir."
"You had better be, or I will find a way to show you the meaning of real discipline. Are we clear?"
"Yes, sir. Sorry, sir."
"One step back," Eric ordered. "Clear my personal space now."
The boy responded instantly, dropping back one step before returning to the automatic stiff posture with eyes staring straight ahead.
"Do not move,"
Eric said before turning back to Miram, who was looking a little surprised.
"Please, Commander, continue."
"Yes, sir, Commodore. The auto reported fleet movement in our direction. It's significant."
Eric sighed, unsurprised. The only question in his mind had been when the Empire would make their serious play, not whether it would happen. He looked over the numbers that were in the file and whistled.
"Not good."
He was clearly looking at a force intended to permanently deal with the resistance the Empire had encountered.
"They're through playing games," he noted, keeping his voice calm. "Well, we're going to have our work cut out for us."
Miram shot him a disbelieving look, clearly wondering if he hadn't read the intelligence wrong. She pitched her voice low.
"Sir, I don't think we can even slow them down."
"You might be right,"
Eric conceded, allowing the volume of his voice to rise up and carry his words clearly around the command deck.
"Yet we'll have to do what we can. For now, as best we can tell, they don't know the location of Earth. However, look at the number of those ships. If they take the Primine, they'll have the forces free to search. We won't stay hidden for long, so we make a stand and we turn them back."
Miram glanced to one side, her attention caught as she saw the armored head of Odysseus lift up, chin rising slightly, matching the shifting posture of those within earshot. For a moment, as Miram stood there, she actually felt like they would do exactly that. Then, of course, she looked at the numbers again. Primine Central Command, Rankiel. Admiral Rael Tanner slumped behind his desk, trying but failing to process the warning he'd just received from the Terran allies. The sheer number of warships made no sense to his mind. He just couldn't conceive of what they meant. Who would ever need to build such an armada? The way of war was alien to him, for all that he had chosen his current position, and so the sheer mass of ships he found himself facing had left him entirely unsorted.
"Few worlds have men such as yourself in their command."
Tanner nearly leapt from his seat, still unused to the now regular visits from the entity he had once believed to be an ancient computer system.
"How many times have I asked you not to do that, Central?" he demanded.
43. Well, 44 now, I suppose.
Tanner scowled at the slightly odd-looking figure before him, odd more in the fact that there was nothing memorable about the man, assuming it was a man. One's eyes seemed to skate too easily off blurred features. In the moment, nothing remarkable. But as soon as he looked away, Tanner couldn't remember anything about the man besides a slightly luminescent blur.
"What do you want this time?"
Tanner asked, aggravated.
He supposed he should be more deferential to the de facto leader of the entire world and influential leader of the Premene people. But frankly, he was more than a little annoyed with the entity for having fooled them for so long. As I've said before, it isn't what I want that you should focus on, Central replied easily. It is what you need.
What I need is an armada. If you would care to pull one from wherever you come from, I would be most appreciative, Tanner growled, standing up and walking over to a small station with refreshments, where he poured himself something to drink. I would offer you something, but I honestly do not want to.
Central laughed, softly amused. I am certain I will survive your dislike, Rael. Will you survive what is coming without help? Tanner slammed down the container, splashing his hand and the station with the faint blue liquid within. He glared angrily at the entity.
What would you have of me?
Rael, the entity said soothingly, I would have you for a friend. Ask, and I shall offer what I can. Do not ask, and I will offer everything I can think of anyway. This is not some bargain I am attempting to strike. Physically, my resources are limited, but I am in many ways the sum total of every mind ever to live, grow, and die on Rankiel. I would offer my strength in defense of my home. I feel that it is unlikely that this empire would treat you well, my friends. AEV Odysseus, Rankiel System. Eric didn't have any brilliant answers to the current problem. The fleet numbers were beyond any tricks he might have up his sleeve, and the Empire was very human at its core. The Imperials were learning beasts and tool users, and had clawed their way up the food chain by being smart enough to turn any small loophole to their advantage, just like Terrans. That made them dangerous in ways that the Drossen just couldn't even approach. Numbers alone were nothing in comparison to intelligence, creativity, and sheer dogged refusal to bow before the inevitable. So he found himself growing more and more mired in his own worries, despite what he had said to Miriam, Odysseus, and the nearby crew. For times like this, he only had one person on board he could speak with, so Eric redirected from his course and headed there. Steph looked up as the Commodore entered his quarters and didn't have to look twice to recognize the mode the man was in.
"How bad are we looking at, Rays?"
he asked, recognizing that the man standing before him was not Commodore Eric Weston, but without any shadow of a doubt was instead Raziel, Secret of God, the wing commander of the AA task force he had signed up with during the war.
"The worst I've ever seen," Eric answered simply.
Steph whistled, getting up from where he had been sitting on the edge of his bed and walking to a cupboard built into the wall. He opened it and pulled out a bottle of amber fluid, unscrewing the cap smoothly before taking a long draw and handing it over to his commanding officer and friend.
"Tell me about it, then."
Eric slumped into the rolling chair that he'd pulled out from under the small desk, accepted the whiskey Steph offered, and took a pull.
"We're fucked."
Steph grimaced, taking the bottle back.
"Going to need more than that, boss."
Eric smiled ruefully.
"Passer got a read of the Imperial flotilla. The numbers suck."
"I could have guessed that.
How much suck?"
"Black hole?"
Eric shrugged. "They've got us outnumbered by 30-1, conservatively speaking. Outmassed by more than that again."
"Ouch.
That sounds bad,"
Steph admitted. They exchanged the bottle a couple more times in silence.
"They have ways of neutralizing our key weapon systems, more or less," Eric said, settling back in the chair. "The singularity cores disrupt transition cannons. We can't do much with the nukes other than target the ship's extremities. Unfortunately, those are often too close to the warps generated by the drives, and now they've learned to use chaff to disrupt pulse torps. We still hold a power advantage due to our lasers and armor, and could win a slugging match on even or slightly uneven odds, but this is too much, Steph."
"We faced too much before, Rays. We'll figure something out."
"I don't know what. This time I just don't know."
Steph gestured offhandedly.
"Why don't we transition the torps directly?"
"It's been considered, but there are issues. Namely, containment doesn't seem to survive the transition, and it fails quite early in the process."
"Ouch. I do not want to know how they figured that out, Steph admitted, taking another drink. Why do you think the rogues don't transition with their guns loaded? Eric laughed wryly.
Well, there has to be something, Steph said.
What about drones?
Huh? What about them?
Drones were illegal for military.